Hello, this is your Polycast for Wednesday, August 17th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, the Green Party presidential candidate comes to Minnesota and tighter security at the Minnesota State Fair. Green Party presidential nominee Jill Stein made a campaign swing through Minneapolis last night. She addressed supporters at First Universalist Church in South Minneapolis before taking part in a community forum on the north side sponsored by the group Neighborhoods Organizing for Change. Stein says African Americans should receive reparations for centuries of racial injustice and called for the legalization of marijuana along with the cancellation of student debt. She says the two-party system serves wealthy elites at the expense of everyone else.
Politicians do not have a right to our votes. They have to earn our votes. And neither one of the major party candidates has public support. They are the most disliked and untrusted candidates in our history.
Before her events last night, Stein stopped by the NPR News studios. She told Tom Cranch she's in the process of filing as a candidate in Minnesota. He asked her if she'll be on the ballot in all 50 states.
Close to it. Many of the deadlines are still coming through now. So in the last election, we were on for 85% of voters. This time we expect to be more like 95%.
Your fundraising numbers, close to $900,000 if we round up. That is all individual contributions. There's no PAC money, no corporate money there.
Yes, that's right. Exactly. And in fact, our fundraising went off the charts the night that Bernie Sanders endorsed Hillary. The floodgates opened on our fundraising. A mysterious flood of $27 donations began flowing into our campaign. So we've actually doubled the fundraising just in the last 3 weeks or so. And those numbers are not yet reflected in that $900,000 total.
You make an allusion there to $27 donations. That was the average donation of the Bernie Sanders campaign, as he said during the campaign. Now, you have been pretty honest about the fact that you don't think Hillary Clinton is a valid option for Sanders supporters, as Sanders himself urged people to do at the Democratic National Convention. So if he did that, why not? Why do you differ with what Bernie Sanders said?
As Bernie himself said, this is a movement and not a man. It's about building a politics of integrity because the American people have really had it with being thrown under the bus, a rigged economy and a rigged political system that keeps us there. And while Hillary may have been influenced by the Sanders campaign to have changed her tune on a variety of issues, on living wages, on a more aggressive climate policy, for example, you know, she has a track record. She has decades worth of service to Wall Street, and she is still flooded with their money, as well as money from the fossil fuel companies. And she has refused to take a stand, for example, against fracking, and played a major role in promoting fracking around the world. And she has been really the leader of a very militaristic foreign policy, approving of the Iraq war and leading the charge into the catastrophe that we know today as Libya. So Hillary may say one thing, but she changes her tune frequently, and it would be the opposite of everything that people have been building inside of the Sanders campaign to surrender their values, basically based on fear, and resort to a lesser evil candidate who really does not advance the vision and the deep change that the Sanders movement has instigated.
Given our time is brief, and you will have a chance here in Minneapolis to make a longer speech, as candidates are wont to do on the campaign trail, tell us, what is your top policy agenda item, the one thing you think sets you apart from either the Republican or Democratic nominee?
Well, overarching, what sets me apart is that I don't take the money from the predatory banks, from the fossil fuel giants, from the war profiteers and the insurance companies. So what sets me apart is that I'm the one candidate that actually has the liberty to stand up for what America needs. And that is, number one, we need good jobs. We need good jobs at living wages. We call for an emergency jobs program, 20 million jobs, so that everyone who wants a job has a full-time good job, and that these jobs are focused on the emergency of climate change. So the center of our agenda is a Green New Deal, like the New Deal that got us out of the Great Depression, because for most people, we are not in an economic recovery. We're in an economic emergency. But we also call for focusing those jobs on greening our energy, our food, and our public transportation system. And one other issue that really sets me apart is that I'm the only candidate to say, hey, we bailed out Wall Street. It's about time we bailed out the victims of Wall Street, that generation of young people who are held hostage by student loan debt. So we call for actually forgiving that debt, as well as making public higher education free, which pays for itself. We know that from the GI Bill following the Second World War. For every dollar we put in, we get seven back.
You were in Minneapolis today for a couple of events, a rally, and then an event you're calling A Conversation on Black America. What is your specific message for black voters when you speak in North Minneapolis today?
That we can solve this crisis. We have a crisis of racial justice in America, and it expresses itself in police violence, which we can fix. We don't need to have violence in our communities of color. But there's a deeper systemic problem, which is really a holdover from the legacy of the institution of racism, of slavery, on which we were founded. And we are calling for a deep national conversation, basically a truth and reconciliation commission about this, because it's not only the issues of police violence, it's also, you know, the incredible high rates of unemployment, the lack of investment in and in fact, the extraction of wealth and labor out of communities of color, the historic redlining, the disinvestment in the schools and the closures of the schools and the school-to-prison pipeline. So we call for a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and we call for
nationally.
Nationally, exactly.
And how would that work? Right away, that brings to mind post-apartheid South Africa.
Exactly,
right?
Yes. Yeah. So the first thing we would do would be to establish a commission to look at ways to have this conversation, which we believe should include the concept of reparations for the historic debt owed to the African-American community, which is so impoverished currently by the biases, economic, educational, health, et cetera, that have been, and housing, leveled against that community.
You yourself are a doctor, an internist. You have seen the headlines. One of the top internet searches about you focuses on questions about your position on vaccines. And I'm wondering, do you support the immunization schedule that's put forward, recommended by what's called the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, which works in conjunction with the CDC? And those are guidelines, as I probably don't have to tell you, that are given to doctors like yourself when it comes to vaccinating children. So what's your stance there?
Yes, I support it. And actually, I always have. I think this is the Swift Boat issue of 2016. It's an effort to sort of divert attention from my primary agenda. And certainly, I not only support vaccines, I support healthcare as a human right so that people actually have access to those vaccines. But the issue I've drawn attention to is the need for regulatory institutions that we can truly trust. Right now, America has a 90% rate of distrusting our fundamental institutions and our politics and our regulatory boards and our Supreme Court and our executive and our Congress. So we have a crisis of faith in our institutions. So that's what I point to, is that we need to get the money out of our regulatory, out of our political process. In fact, $700 million from Big Pharma spent on lobbying just in 2 years alone. And you have the revolving door between the industries and the regulatory boards. So I want to clean up those institutions so people have complete faith and don't have to worry that we're going to have a repeat of, for example, the Vioxx scandal, where the FDA sat on critical scientific studies showing 140,000 cases of severe heart disease developed while the FDA suppressed information. So we need to ensure that everyone can trust the FDA. But let me say across the board, vaccinations are a pillar of public health and save countless lives and have been at the foundation of our public health process. So, yes, I support vaccinations, but I want an FDA that is above reproach.
Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein talking to our Tom Cran. The Minnesota State Fair will increase security this year, adding bag checks to the fairground entrances. What they're not sure about is how visitors will handle the changes, as Peter Cox reports.
Crews with Parcos Construction spent yesterday afternoon remodeling the DNR bandshell at the state fairground.
I just heard this morning that they were going to be checking everybody's bags, purses, just like they do at hockey rink, you know, so...
Jack Parcos is a general manager for the construction company. He's hoping to come back in the next few weeks as a customer.
It's going to make lines longer, I imagine, because they got to check everybody out, which is probably a good thing.
But, he says, it changes the feel of the fair.
Sure does. You know, this is a kind of a family get-together, and when you got to do a security check, you know, that just kind of belittles everybody, you know. What are we running into? Where's the world coming to?
A week from tomorrow, the state fair will add bag checks at its 11 entrances. General Manager Jerry Hammer says there's already more than 300 officers on the fair's police force.
We've added it's close to 100 additional security staff from three professional security contractors. This is what they do. It's what they specialize in. They will be conducting the bag checks at our outside gates. If it does slow things down, we don't expect it'll be much.
He says bags, coolers, packages, and purses will be subject to search for prohibited items like alcohol, fireworks, and weapons. People without bags can go through an express line. Hammer says the searches are not in response to any threat.
We want people to feel safe. You know, the public safety, that's our number one obligation. That's always been our number one responsibility.
Pat Mancini understands that. He's now gearing up Mancini's Alfresco for the 12-day fair. He says people are already used to bag searches at sports events and concerts.
Yeah, I think, you know, given the state of affairs in our country, I think people are very security-minded and understand why. And I guess it's the new norm.
The state fair bolstered security measures in 2002 after the September 11th terror attacks, when they added stricter vehicle rules on the grounds and started background checks on all fair employees. The fair has made incremental changes since then. You can't bring in drones, hoverboards, and skateboards. But for years, there have been places to watch skateboarders and even buy skateboards. James Call is the master ramp builder with Third Layer, a Golden Valley skate shop. He understands the need for safety, but he always liked the openness of the fairgrounds.
You know, I believe in safety first, for sure. Bag checks and stuff like that, I feel like, might be a little over the top. So, really, I have mixed feelings about the new policies out here.
The fair says there will be no limits on the size of bags brought in, and they'll have tables outside the gates for bag inspections, similar to what you'd see at a Twins game. Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News, St. Paul.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.